Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning and welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5, 7 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday morning. We do appreciate you listening. Still to come on the program in about a half hour from the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor will be with us, so you want to stick around for that. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, the official Democrat response to the Jeff Poor Show, my friend Parker Griffin, former congressman from the 5th Congressional District up in North Alabama. So all that and more, 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. That works really, really well. But joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest. First time I've had her on, but hopefully we get her on more in the future. State Representative Charlotte Meadows on the line. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be on your program this morning. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. We do appreciate it. Well, a few things. First off, you represent a district near Montgomery, or in Montgomery, I should say.
Actually, it's all in Montgomery County, and it's really right next to the State House. So my district starts, goes up and down, if anybody's familiar with Atlanta Highway or Madison Avenue. It starts at Madison Avenue, goes all the way down Atlanta Highway to Chantilly. So it's a pretty good, it's a great district, and represents a lot of diverse people.
And, you know, the people may not know about your background or know Avi, but you've really been kind of, big instrumental in the whole, these ways of approaching public education that maybe not favored by some, but are seen as outside-the-box thinking or whatever you want to call it, but charter school, school choice, things of that nature. Tell us about your background and really how you wound up in the legislature.
Well, I appreciate that. Actually, my background for school choice comes by the fact that I'm a mother with three children. And our oldest son ended up having some special needs. And I realized that in spite of the fact that I have a bachelor's degree from Auburn and a master's from South Alabama, and very well versed in how to get what I need, we were banging our heads against the wall to get him the services he really deserved. And so I thought, what are the parents doing who don't have the resources that I have? So I started out as a PTA president at my son's high school, moved from there to get onto the school board here in Montgomery County, served on that for one term, which was 6 years, during some pretty tumultuous time. And my term ended literally as the grade changing scandal, which y'all might have heard about back in 2012, was being revealed. And then I worked for a company called Students First that helped me really learn a lot about policies and what policies in the country, around the nation, work. And I was able to work with school systems and districts around the state of Alabama, and actually helped lobby several of the things that got approved in the early years of the 2010 rejuvenation, I guess, of the State House by the Republicans. So I was helpful with getting the AAA, the Alabama Accountability Act, not passed, but once it was passed, I was very supportive of thanking the people, because we could go into that. But anyway, and then I really did support the charter school legislation in 2015. So those were two of the pieces of legislation that most people might have heard about, but we really still have, and those were good pieces. Great. The charter school bill is a strong charter school bill. Since then, I've worked with several other people, and we started the first charter school in Montgomery. It's called the Academy, and I'm still the board chair. We're starting our third year here in about a month. But in spite of all that, we still, in Alabama, don't have much in the way of school choice. And, you know, Jeff, when you decide to go get gas for your car, you make that decision based on something. I mean, it might be convenience, it might be price, it might be the friendliness of the people in the, you know, that are waiting on you. Same thing with restaurants. I mean, every decision that we as Americans make is based on some decision. I mean, we're not just assigned to a church. We're not assigned to go to a restaurant on a Saturday night. But when it comes to schools, that's what we are with our children. And I think that parents should have more choice about what they do to educate their own kids. I mean, so right now, parents can homeschool, they can send their kids to public schools, and they can send their kids to private schools. And those are essentially the choices that are available for actually most people in Mobile.
Right.
We do have, we've had 5 charter schools this past school year, 4 more starting this fall. So we'll have 9 around the state, but there's one in Mobile, and that's Excel, which is doing a great job. They were the first charter school to actually start, but they are specifically for students who have failed out, dropped out, or been kicked out. And so that school is doing a wonderful job bringing people that really did not have any more choices back into the school system to help them get a degree, to get a high school diploma, and then, you know, go ahead and make something out of their lives that would not have been possible without finishing high school. So even though you've got a charter school, you really don't have a charter school that just any family can up and go to or would want to up and go to. I mean, it's just not designed for your regular student.
Representative, explain the charter school concept to some of us that may not be, I was listening to you with Phil Williams, our friend up in North Alabama, and mm-hmm. the charter school concept may be foreign to some folks, but I thought you gave a pretty good explanation.
Well, when we passed the charter school law, or they passed it, and I was there physically in the building, but it was designed to be a public school paid for with public school dollars for any child who wants to go. They are all, by definition of the state law, nonprofit. So they're not out there making money for anybody. The charter school boards are self-appointed or self-selected. So they are made up of people that just want to make a difference and have an option. Charter schools have a contract with the state, and that contract says, within the first 5 years, we will do this, that, and the other. Specifically, things like make sure that our kids are attending on, school attendance, school achievement. We have to be making progress towards the goal of every student being on grade level or at least meeting the average of the other schools in the area. Or the contract is canceled at the end of those 5 years. In addition, we have regular monitoring by the state, just like the other schools do. We choose our students strictly by whoever wants to come. There's a lottery. If there's more students that want to come than we have space for. So the contract actually sets out how many students we can accept for each grade each year. And then we even have to go back to the state commission, the charter commission, every year to say, are you okay with us expanding to the next grade level? So we started at Lead Academy with 360 students. The second year we had 456 was the number that we could have grades kindergarten through sixth grade. This year we are moving forward with seventh grade and we'll have 600 students plus a pre-K classroom. So our total enrollment is limited to how many students the commission has approved. And for this current upcoming year, we're adding seventh grade, but most of the seventh grade spots were filled with our past year sixth grade, where our growth comes, the new students usually come in kindergarten. So we have a space for 96 kids. If we have 150 that apply, we just pull a lottery, and it's really not based on anything except for at our school, we do give priority treatment to students who have an older sibling in the school. So charter schools are very non-discriminatory. We have special ed students. We have diversity throughout the building. Our board gets to make our own policy decisions about everything from uniforms to transportation to the curriculum. We do have to abide by the state standards. So, the Alabama Course of Study, every public school in the state uses that same course of study. And of course we do as well, but our curriculum is decided and determined by the board and then carried out by the teachers and the administrative staff.
Joined by State Representative Charlotte Meadows of Montgomery here on the program. Representative, the elusive school choice, there's been a lot done on it, I guess, in the last several years, but getting a real full school choice sort of initiative underway, it may or not be in the cards in the last year of a quadrennium, But my argument is this, that you know, we got an election coming up. We got an election coming up, and people seem to be very much on board with this concept. What do you think the mood is, right, especially as the AEA is kind of back on the rise here, it seems?
You know, that's something that this last session, very concerning to me that we couldn't even get a clarification of the charter school bill. We couldn't even get the procedural vote called the BIR to pass so that we could even discuss the legislation on the floor of the House. I do think it, and that, what's so really surprising about that is in this current year, any number of states have increased their school choice offerings around the country. And Alabama, being one of the reddest states out there, did not. And it was just really shocking to me. I mean, one of the things that I think President Trump really supported was school choice, and he even called it the 21st century civil rights issue of our day. And I believe that's true. I mean, I really believe that every child has the right to the best education that can be provided for them. And we're not meeting that goal. I mean, the schools in Mobile are generally pretty good. I'm sure there's some that are better than others. I even use this example in Montgomery. There's an excellent academic program called LAMP, but every child is not suited for LAMP. I mean, some children would absolutely not, would just drown at LAMP because it's just a very difficult curriculum. But, you know, that doesn't mean that every child can't learn. So as the adults in the system, we've got to do our best to provide whatever option it takes for each child to learn. And that's, I think I started out saying, my oldest son had some learning challenges, and we had to struggle to get him so educated to the point where he's now a very successful young adult and working, living on his own and doing all kinds of great things. But, you know, parents shouldn't have to work against the system to get to the point where they feel like their children are being in the right place. There's a bunch of different options that are out there. The education savings account, the AAA, there's vouchers. There's all kinds of things that other states are doing and have done that seem to make a really big difference that we haven't even started yet.
We'll wind it down on this, and I mentioned the teachers union, kind of on the comeback. We saw it, it's particularly this last session, the Literacy Act, and they were able to somehow or another get a bill through that says if you can't read at a third grade level, you can't go to the fourth grade, and they were able to get a delay on that, which, is this something, the AEA typically an opponent of these school choice options? Is that something you're concerned about kind of on the horizon?
Oh, I'm very concerned about it. I mean, the first time I ran for this seat, the AEA opposed me to the tune of $200,000. But that's, I mean, they can't spend that kind of money against every one of us, but right now they don't have to. And let me just make sure everybody, your listening audience, understands. That bill did pass, but the governor vetoed it.
Right.
It's not in effect yet. And we will be continuing with the Literacy Act as it's originally written for this current school year. However, there is a willingness to look at it in January, February, after we get this past year's achievement data and make a decision then. Do we, delay it by a year or something? Nobody wants to penalize children because of COVID, but on the other hand, we penalize children every year that we don't make sure they are reading. I mean, reading is fundamental to success. So anytime you allow a student to progress past third grade into the grades where you're actually reading to learn and they can't read, then they can't learn, and you've doomed them to a life of failure. That's kind of basic, but that's the way I feel about it. You know, the AEA did have a lot of input into financials in the 2018 cycle. It's interesting when you go and look at their union is called A-Vote, and you can pull up a report and see who all they gave money to, and there's a bunch of Republicans that took money from A-Vote, and some of them took large sums, $35,000, which is a lot. So it's certainly something that as they continue to build their, I would call it a war chest, we need to be aware of what they're buying. And, Republicans and for that matter, Democrats that are taking money need to be aware of what they're going to be expected to vote on. Because if we don't, as a state, really focus on improving education, regardless of who we've gotten money from, we're hurting our future, not just our current, but we're hurting our future generations. We can't bring businesses in. We can't hire people that can't work. I mean, that can't read. It's a huge trickle down effect. And we really have got to focus on improving our education. And that, I mean, there's a lot more to it than just school choice. There's, you know, we've got to make sure the teachers that are graduating from our educational institutions are well prepared, have the resources they need. And that's what the Literacy Act was about, was to make sure the teachers knew how to, the best way to teach reading. So, I mean, there's not just one solution, but if the teachers union, I mean, we haven't even talked about critical race theory, okay. And I don't really want to talk, I would say we could spend another 30 minutes on that, but the NEA has said that that's something they are pushing. I haven't heard the AEA come out and say that yet, but I mean, there's, you know, teachers have a lot on their plate,
right?
But the successful teaching of the students should be the most important thing in the classroom, and particularly in the early grades. I mean, if we've got to get the kids the foundation to be math literate and to be, you know, reading literate. And right now, math is probably even worse than reading in their state.
Representative, we're up against a break here, but you've been very gracious with your time. We got to get you on again soon, and maybe we could hit some of these other topics dealing with education.
I'd be glad to. I appreciate your interest in the topic. It's important for our state.
We'll talk again soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
That was State Representative Charlotte Meadows. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.